It's a trap.
Hello and welcome to episode number 81 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray. Today we're going to be continuing our series on X-Wing upgrade card design.
Yeah, for the series we've done two episodes already, and we're going over the history of the game and focusing in on upgrade cards that affected the design of the game and how the game has developed over the years.
Yep, a lot of cards to read, so let's get to it.
So in our last Essential Upgrade Cards episode, we ended with Wave 7, which was kind of a notable endpoint because we moved into a new era of X-Wing, starting with the Force Awakens core set, followed closely by Wave 8.
Yeah, there wasn't actually any new notable design cards in the core set. We got a new damage deck, new asteroids, but as far as upgrade cards, not much to talk about there. When we get to the first half of Wave 8, which is ships related to the Force Awakens movie, we did get some pretty interesting upgrade cards there, though.
So the first portion of Wave 8 consisted of just the ships relating to the Force Awakens. So two of the new ships that were introduced in that movie, which were the TIE FO and the T-70 X-Wing, both of which were obviously featured in the Force Awakens core set, but Wave 8 we saw standalone expansions for these ships that included some new upgrade cards.
Yeah, so with the T-70, we got the integrated astromech upgrade card, which did a little bit more than just be an extra hull upgrade for your X-Wing at 0 points.
Integrated astromech is a 0-point X-Wing only modification, and it reads, when you are dealt a damage card, you may discard one of your astromech upgrade cards to discard that damage card without resolving its effect. Pretty straightforward ability right off the bat here. Basically, you get effectively one extra hit point here with the added ability that you're going to be able to cancel a crits ability with the cost of having to discard whatever astromech you have equipped.
Right, so here at the cost of your modification slot, you get to change your astromech into either a hull or shield upgrade. But the really powerful and interesting thing about this is kind of the timing window on when it works, where you get to draw the card, see what hit or critical hit you would take, and then choose when to eject the astromech.
Yeah, and I think this card's value is pretty evident, especially when you compare it to cards like shield upgrade or hull upgrade, where it's not only quite a bit cheaper, because at minimum, astromechs cost 1 point, and this is a 0 point cost, so you're effectively getting the effect of a hull or shield upgrade. Plus, you get this really cool control, and I've had it come up for me in games where I've pulled up a nasty crit like damage cockpit, which can be devastating if it lands on one of your ace ships, so you drop down to pilot skill 0. Well, I've had to discard my R2-D2 for the sake of maintaining my higher pilot skill, and that's been very crucial in keeping me alive and helping me to win some games.
Yeah, obviously very powerful and very nuanced in its interactions. We also got the Juke Elite Pilot talent coming with the TIE FO. That's a 2-point small ship only elite pilot talent that reads, when attacking, if you have an evade token, you may change one of the defender's evade results to a focus result.
Now, this card's cool for a lot of reasons. One of the primary reasons I like it is it gives you some added value onto an evade token, which is not always a token that you get to use efficiently. A lot of times when you're taking evade tokens on ships, you end up effectively wasting that action if you don't get shot at all, because you're only going to get the real value out of that evade token normally if you're spending it to cancel a hit result.
Yeah, and so Juke has quite a wide range of applications. It's generally used by Imperial ships, which just have more access to evade tokens than the other factions, but you can use it either in situations where they have no options for modification, whether your ship's pilot ability is not allowing that, or you have control effects that are stripping their ability to get focus tokens to modify their defense dice. And so then you're essentially getting a crack shot type result each turn. Or you can use Juke in mass, where maybe that first Juke just forces their ship to spend the focus token on defense, and then each other ship attacking with Juke now gets to eliminate one of their evade results.
Well, Juke also opens up the possibility that you're going to get double value out of that single token. If you're using Juke on a ship with a pilot skill that's higher than your target, you're going to not only be able to trigger Juke when you're attacking, but then when you're being attacked in return, you'll then have the opportunity to spend that evade token defensively. So you'll get both an offensive boon and a defensive boon. And this works really well in combinations like the TIE X7 title, which is passing out free evade tokens to you after you perform certain speed maneuvers, and it pairs really well with another Wave 8 upgrade card, Comm Relay.
Yeah, so this was really the first tech upgrade card that mattered. The Force Awakens release introduced us to the tech slot. Comm Relay is really the standout, and I think still maintains one of the staple tech slots this day.
Comm Relay is a 3-point tech upgrade that reads, you cannot have more than one evade token. During the end phase, do not remove an unused evade token from your ship.
Yeah, so obviously Juke's great if you have an evade token lying around, and here Comm Relay gives you a great way to have an evade token lying around. What this really does is allows you to prepare for that opening engagement and have it be really favorable, where Comm Relay, you take that evade turn one, and then it's sitting there ready to be used up until combat. It kind of works a bit like a shield that you can regenerate at the cost of an action the next turn.
Yeah, the Imperials don't really have access to true regeneration abilities, but this is about as close as they can get. And in most cases, it's just about as effective, being able to hold on to that evade token, where having to spend that evade token kind of becomes like losing a shield that you're going to get back later. One thing that is really interesting about the combination of Juke and Comm Relay is that they helped make the TIE FO standalone expansion kind of one of the most efficient expansions, in that you kind of get everything you need to run these cards really efficiently.
Yeah, I think that kit remains one of the best values even today.
So moving after that first set of Wave 8 ships, the ones that focused on the Force Awakens, between that and the rest of Wave 8, we had the Imperial Assault Carrier release on December 21st of 2015.
Yeah, and with the Gazanti, we got Agent Callus, an Imperial crew that works as sort of a precursor to the condition cards.
Yeah, Agent Callus is a 2-point crew card that reads Imperial only, and it's unique. You can only have one of these in a list. At the start of the first round, choose one enemy small or large ship. When attacking or defending against that ship, you may change one of your focus results into a hit or evade result. Yeah, and you very much get the feel here for a condition card-like effect. This is actually very similar to the effect we see on the Escorta Settle Elite Pilot Talent, which dealt out a condition card in Wave 10.
Yeah, and so not only was Agent Callus just a powerful crew choice for the Imperials, which they don't get as many powerful crew choices as the other factions, but it was kind of disproportionately effective based off the number of ships your opponent was playing with. So if your opponent only has 2 to 3 ships, then the impact of selecting one of those for Agent Callus is going to be very effective. Whereas against a swarm of ships, its value is going to go down drastically, as it's just a minor amount of modification, but it really needs to last the course of the game to get a lot of value out of.
So after the Imperial Assault Carrier released, we saw the remainder of Wave 8 release on March 17th of 2016, and this wave has a whole lot of interesting and game-changing stuff that it brought to X-Wing.
Yeah, this is definitely one of those. The whole wave was a benchmark for X-Wing design. We could probably spend a whole episode talking about the upgrade cards for Wave 8, but we've limited it just to, I think, the most impactful.
So to start that off, we were looking at the card Guidance Chips. This has become a staple of most ordnance-using ships in X-Wing, and it's pretty obvious why based on how efficient this card is.
Guidance Chips is a 0-point modification that reads, once per round, when attacking with a torpedo or missile secondary weapon, you may change one die result to a hit result or a crit result if your primary weapon value is 3 or higher.
Now, this card is a pretty obvious choice for most ordnance carriers based on the fact that it's a modification, and there weren't a lot of great ordnance modifications in the game that at that point. There had been previous attempts to make ordnance more effective with things like munitions failsafe, but those proved to just not be worth the point value here. Here we have a 0-point cost card taking up a modification slot, which was not necessarily a slot a lot of ordnance-carrying ships used. So here they had an obvious addition that just straight up made their ordnance that much more effective.
Right, and so the drawback of ordnance is you're paying a decent amount of points for just one attack, or after extra munitions, just 2 uses of that attack. And they're powerful attacks. You usually get to roll more dice than your ship normally rolls on its attack, sometimes going from a primary weapon value of 2 all the way up to rolling 4 dice. But to get the value out of those points, those attacks really did need to hit the upper bounds of their potential. And before Guidance Chips, munitions just really didn't do that, because a lot of them required you to spend your target lock to even fire the attack. So it was difficult to have enough modification to consistently get 3 to 4 hits on each attack.
Yeah, to use most ordnance effectively to get your torpedoes or missiles to be worth the point investment you're paying to get them out on the board, you usually need about 2 points of modification. The most common way would be if you can get a target lock and a focus to modify your shot. That'd be a great direction. Guidance Chips provides another avenue there where it has an almost target lock effect, giving you that ability to change a blank result into something usable. So you didn't necessarily need both a target lock and a focus to be efficient here. You could have one of those two things plus the Guidance Chip effect to fill in the gaps. This obviously had a huge impact right away with the appearance of Triple Jumpmasters rocking Ordnance, and just the fact that we've seen kind of substantial, what I'd call attack dice creep, where the average number of attack dice being rolled, especially early on in the game, went up substantially. So now it's not at all unexpected to see 4 attack dice coming at you, heavily modified very early on in the game.
Right. Well, and Guidance Chips was really the start of that shift where, before, most ships didn't have access to spiking their damage potential because munitions just weren't that effective of an option. After Guidance Chips, the game hasn't really been the same in reliance on your primary weapon value. Now it's all about how do I skew that towards, you know, utilizing my munitions or looking at other secondary weapon options.
And it's really important to remember that prior to Guidance Chips and even prior to extra munitions, we did see 4 attack dice rolls at range with things like Whisper and the TIE Phantom, but those attacks often didn't feature heavy modification until Whisper started shooting. Whisper didn't have access to a native target lock, so usually like the first Whisper shot you'd take would be just focus-only modified, so there was a good chance there'd be a couple blanks in there. After that, the fire control system would start triggering and getting target locks, so Whisper would become a very deadly force. Starting with Guidance Chips, we really started to see initial attacks where the first time attack dice are being rolled from ships, they're getting 4 dice out there with Ordnance, and those are heavily modified.
Yeah, Guidance Chips, obviously great, but Atani Mind Link, I think, is, you know, probably my favorite of the Wave 8 upgrades.
Atani Mind Link, at first, not exactly clear how good it was. We didn't see how effective Atani Mind Link was, at least in the competitive scene, until some time after it had been released, but it proved to be one of the most, if not the most efficient values you can get in the game.
And I think it is funny that it took quite a while for Atani to catch on. Part of that is because in a vacuum, it's a rebalanced push the limit where the point value is only 1, but you pay for those points in a more steep drawback. So Atani Mind Link is a 1-point scum and villainy elite pilot talent that reads, each time you are assigned a focus or stress token, each other friendly ship with Atani Mind Link must also be assigned the same type of token if it does not already have one.
So this ability is really powerful, and what it did do in the game is kind of redefine what action efficiency really looked like. So early on in the game's history, as we've discussed before, push the limit kind of established the threshold for what an action-efficient ship would be. A ship back then using push the limit would take an action and then get another action with a stress token. That was a value for about the 3-point cost of push the limit. Atani Mind Link takes that to a whole new level, where if you have a list with 3 ships using Atani Mind Link, that's 1 point for each copy of Atani Mind Link. And every time you're using a focus, you're effectively getting 2 additional actions there, where those other ships get free focus tokens plus their normal actions. So your actually net gain here is a lot higher, and you do have that stress drawback, but a lot of times that's not enough to counterbalance how good this effect is.
All right, I want to take you a few steps back there, because it is not overtly better than push the limit in a vacuum. So you have, let's say, 3 ships with Atani Mind Link. That first ship that takes a focus action is not going to get any further action efficiency. So it's just basic, I got 1 focus for the turn. It is going to give 1 focus to the rest of your ships, which will be free to choose a different action or even a second focus action, as they have not performed a focus action. They were just assigned a focus token. So that's part of the drawback. The second is with push the limit, you had access to all of your actions, whereas Atani, you're limited to just the focus token plus 1 other action. Now, focus tokens are really good and probably the best action outside of some of the special ones. I think the real power is in the maneuver dial. Where push the limit, each of your ships is going to be stressed that's using it each turn. Whereas Atani Mind Link, as long as you're not taking red maneuvers or getting dealt stress from other sources, you have access to all of your green and white maneuvers. And even a red maneuver, because you're not stressed, you have the option to take 1. It didn't catch on because people were afraid, because you could only do one red maneuver in your list per turn. So it is balanced differently in the effect. But why it did catch on was suddenly Scum got a lot of ships with great green maneuvers, so that stress drawback meant nothing.
Yeah, we've definitely seen some dial creep and improvement over the years that has made Atani Mind Link really effective, and we still can't deny how effective this card is and efficient it is on its own. It's clearly had a strong impact on the game going forward and set a new threshold for what action efficiency looks like.
But it doesn't matter how efficient your fangs are when there's Sabine Wren flying around. I mean, of course, not the Sabine pilots, all of her clones, but the one Sabine upgrade card.
Sabine Wren is a 2-point crew card. It's unique and it reads, Rebel only. Your upgrade bar gains a bomb upgrade icon. Once per round, before a friendly bomb token is removed, choose one enemy ship at range one of that token. That ship suffers one damage. Now, this is another card that didn't gain a lot of notoriety upon its release. It really grew to stardom after we saw some high-level players do really well with it, particularly Kevin Lyons taking it to the final table at the 2016 Worlds.
Yeah, and as we mentioned in our previous episode, with Wave 7, there's a lot of good bombs. And it turns out when you just add one more damage to those bombs, they go from good to, oh, wow, that's really, really powerful.
Yeah, Sabine Wren really brought bombing back into the game in a strong way. Obviously, we had a much stronger selection of bombs after the release of Wave 7, but suddenly Sabine made those bombs so much more efficient that it kind of redefined the bombing threshold and turned, for a while, Rebels into the bombing faction.
Right, well, and it's particularly powerful on those low hit point ships, like your TIE Interceptor, Fang Fighter, where that one extra damage on each bomb is a third or a quarter of your life, and so hitting a bomb that does one damage automatically plus a Sabine trigger means that's half of your ship. That next bomb is going to finish you off, or if you've taken any damage before, then you're done.
Imperials had a pretty strong place in the metagame for a long time, particularly after the release of the Emperor Palpatine crew card, where they've got some more consistent modification and added to their survivability. But Sabine Wren and bombing on Miranda Donnie started to undermine that, where even if you had a lower pilot skill with your 8 compared to like a Soontir Fel or a Whisper, since you were moving, you knew the exact position of where their ship would be when you moved, making it that much easier to drop those proximity or cluster mines in front of or on top of those. And that guaranteed damage from Sabine meant you could eat through their hit points pretty quickly.
Yeah, that 8.2 crew slot Emperor had nothing on Sabine. Completely powerless there. Speaking of being powerless against attacks, come to our last upgrade card.
Yeah, so another upgrade card. In a way, Sabine kind of undermines the strong defense of like a Soontir Fel or a TIE Phantom by not having to attack in order to do damage, ignoring the glut of defense dice and token modifications they would have. Another card in Wave 8 found a way to get around strong defense as well. Zuckuss, the scum-only crew card, found a way to undermine strong defense even when a defending ship rolled a strong defense roll.
Zuckuss originally read, when attacking, you may receive any number of stress tokens to choose an equal number of defense dice. The defender must re-roll those dice.
Now, originally upon release, this ability was crazy powerful for the 1-point crew cost of this card. And the fact that there were a couple good chassis you could drop this card on. It was great on a Dengar. It was really good on a Trandoshan Slaver YV-666. And what this did was, for ace ships that depended a lot on strong defense rolls, suddenly you could undermine strong defense rolls just by taking some stress tokens.
Yeah, normally you wouldn't want to take multiple stress tokens and then maybe even use it the next turn and get even more stress tokens. But the scum had kind of reached a point of critical mass of modification ability where they didn't care if they were stressed with either the Dengar crew card or the Manaru support ship to give them the actions they needed by being stressed.
Yeah, prior to Manaru being limited to Manaru's effect working only at range one, we saw a lot of lists, including lists that won the 2016 World Championship, where Dengar would take Zuckuss and not care about taking a tremendous pile of stress because Dengar was getting free focus tokens from his wingmate, Manaru.
Now, the card has been modified to only trigger if you are not currently stressed. Then you can take any number of stress tokens to re-roll those defense dice, which now means you have to be a bit more strategic about your use. You have to consider how many defense dice you want to make them re-roll. and even if you want to use the ability at all.
Yeah, it's still a very much a powerful effect for those key attacks where you really want to push damage through, but I think this rewording brings the power level more in line with the original intention of the design. I think this was a moment where the value of certain combinations of cards weren't immediately apparent, otherwise we probably would have saw it worded more like this upon its initial release.
Right, and for a one-point crew, it's still a decently powerful effect. But on its original release, it was really demoralizing to have your defense dice re-rolled turn after turn again. Oh, I got some successes. They were very rarely successes the second time you rolled them.
And beyond the cards we've mentioned, there was obviously a lot of very impactful cards in Wave 8. We've just highlighted a few here that we think were the most impactful on the game. We could spend, like Carson said, a whole episode or more talking about what happened in Wave 8 and how it has changed the X-Wing game going forward. But for the sake of this show, we'll just focus on those four. Hey, Radio TCX listeners. Time for a quick Patreon update. Whole bunch of stuff to announce this month, so we'll start off with our raffle winners for the month of September. This month, we're giving away a Han Solo promo card from Gen Con 2017, as well as a Guns for Hire expansion, and we've got two winners now. Winning the Han Solo promo card is Mike Nordell from California, and winning the Guns for Hire expansion is Chris Rosile from Ohio. Congratulations, guys. We'll be sending those prizes out to you shortly. We also have a couple of announcements for all of our Patreon backers. We are still working to get as many of these rewards out to you as possible. I know there's been a delay, so we really appreciate the patience. At this point, most of you should have received your target locks, barring a couple people internationally while we're sorting out some shipping issues we've been having. I'm starting to ship out the first couple batches of Range 1 rulers, which is our 3-month backer reward for the $3 and $4 tiers. So I think I'm going to send out some emails just to a couple of people to make sure that they arrive safe and sound. So I will contact you if I send you a ruler in this first couple set of batches. We are also excited that we have some more Patreon backer prizes coming now that we're getting caught up on the initial releases. So if you've been backing the show for a while, you will be receiving some really cool swag within the next couple months here. We will announce them formally, I think, in the next week or two here, so stay tuned for that. And if anyone who's not a patron would like to become a backer of the show, please go to patreon.com/radioTCX and join us at any of our tiers here. We have monthly raffles as well as physical rewards for the higher tiers. So please consider doing that to support Radio TCX and our weekly episodes. Again, a huge thank you to everyone who's already become a supporter of the show. And now, back to the cast.
All right, moving on. Let's move on to the Imperial Veterans, featuring the new paint schemes of the TIE Bomber and TIE Defender, along with some new upgrades for them. This came out on June 30th of 2016.
Along with this came some new titles for both the TIE Bomber and the TIE Defender. Obviously, the TIE Defender had some really strong titles here, particularly the TIE X7 title. But we're not going to spend too much time on that because while it was very impactful, it didn't dramatically change anything. It was just a very efficient way to get action economy without having to take actions.
Right, whereas the TIE Shuttle title completely reconfigures how your TIE Bomber works. It takes it from either a bombing or munition ship to a support ship.
Yeah, we had seen titles before this that had converted the upgrade selection on certain ships, but this variation dramatically changed it, where suddenly your TIE Bomber was no longer an ordnance carrier. You lost all those slots for the sake of gaining those two crew slots and some other non-ordnance, more control-based effects.
Yeah, the title reads, TIE Bomber only, your upgrade bar loses all torpedo, missile, and bomb upgrade icons and gains two crew upgrade icons. You cannot equip a crew upgrade card if it costs more than 4 squad points.
And while this didn't have a dramatic effect in the competitive scene of X-Wing, it is very notable in that it completely reconfigures the way you would fly a ship and what you'd expect from a ship. Because suddenly that bomber seems very different if you're not having to load it out with the expensive ordnance and just get a couple support crew cards on there.
Right, and we saw this a little bit with the BTLA-4 Y-Wing title, where you're changing it from more of a turreted ship to more focused jouster, but it's still just, it's going to attack, it's just on whether it's going to attack more powerfully or more frequently. Whereas the TIE Shuttle dramatically says it's going to not focus on attacking and focus on supporting your other ships, which is pretty cool.
Saw the release of Wave 9 of X-Wing on September 22nd of 2016. This brought with it a whole slew of new and interesting ships. We had the Protectorate Starfighter, we had the Lancer-class Pursuit Craft, as well as the TIE SF and the ARC 170.
Yeah, we got the Lats Razi crew card coming with the Shattercaster. Lats Razi, a 2-point unique scum-only crew that reads, when defending, you may remove one stress token from the attacker to add one evade result to your roll.
Now, I will admit that upon seeing this card the first time the wave released, I was not immediately impressed or overwhelmed. It didn't seem particularly good, but now in hindsight, obviously, we've seen how effective this card can be.
Right, and this card was not just used with Asajj Ventress, who deals stress out, but was also used in response to your opponent just dealing stress to themselves as a resource, whether it's Push the Limit, Aces, or effects like the Zuckuss crew or Overclocked Astromech.
Well, and this card was particularly effective on the Asajj Ventress pilot for the Lancer-class Pursuit Craft, but even beyond that, there were so many stress effects, even when this card came out, that it got a tremendous amount of value. If you were facing off against an Atani Mindlink list, and they got stressed out one round, suddenly you were getting free evades on every ship that was shooting at you in that round, which was a huge value on already a pretty durable chassis that was the Lancer-class Pursuit Craft.
And obviously effects that use stress as a resource, like Push the Limit, have been around for quite a while. But here, Lats Razi uses your opponent's stress as a resource, which was pretty cool and has led to some pretty interesting gameplay. Having used Lats a lot, it's a difficult decision sometimes to choose whether or not I want to add that extra evade or keep my opponent stressed for the turn.
Yeah, you'd often have to weigh the options there of like, well, are they likely to perform a maneuver that's green anyway, wherein taking that stress off doesn't really impose a penalty on you? Or situations where if I take that stress off, suddenly I'm opening up their dial in new ways. So I have to decide exactly how important it is to avoid this damage.
Right. And it, of course, was also just a great way to keep in check. Oh, you're going to Zuckuss me, keep taking stress to reroll my defense dice. Well, okay, now you're also just giving me free evade results to use for Lats. So that was a nice counter card to have added.
We also saw in Wave 9 the release of an illicit card called Rigged Cargo Chute. This was a 1-point large ship only upgrade that read, action header, discard this card to drop one cargo token.
Right, and a cargo token is a large debris field. So here, it's got a few interesting aspects. I mean, it's kind of like a meh bomb in some senses, where it's just dealing a stress and maybe a critical damage on a 1 out of 8 chance there. But as you're dropping this in the activation phase, not only are you deploying a 7th obstacle to the map that's going to persist, that's pretty neat, but it also allows you to deal stress to an opponent during the activation phase, potentially before they've revealed and executed on their maneuver dial.
Well, it's also really cool because not only is it activation phase stress control, but it also allows you with a well-placed rigged cargo chute drop to deal 2 stress to a ship that wasn't necessarily expecting it. Because when you drop the rigged cargo chute on a ship, it's going to receive a stress. Then if it passes through that debris cloud, that same activation phase, it will receive another stress, potentially action locking it and giving you 2 opportunities to get that crit rolled.
Yeah, and if your opponent, you know, set a red maneuver and then you drop a stress token on them, that's pretty unfortunate.
The last card we're going to look at here in Wave 9 is the Alliance Overhaul upgrade, but a lot of what we're going to say also applies to the Special Ops Training title card for the TIE SF.
Yeah, so here, this was a way for the designers to balance auxiliary firing arc ships where they didn't want, like the Fire Spray has the same primary weapon value attack on both its forward-facing arc and its rear-facing arc. Here, they didn't necessarily want that on all of the auxiliary arc ships, so these titles allowed them to differentiate between those firing arcs for their primary weapon attacks.
So the Alliance Overhaul is a 0-point upgrade card that reads, Arc 170 only title. When attacking with a primary weapon from your primary firing arc, you may roll 1 additional attack die. When attacking from your auxiliary firing arc, you may change 1 of your focus results into a crit. So this was effectively a way to balance out the attack value where they wanted to give these ships the ability to roll 3 attack dice, which is very important for ships if you want to reach a certain damage threshold. But they didn't want to make them too powerful by giving the option to roll those 3 attack dice out the auxiliary firing arc. The Special Ops training title on the TIE SF very much does the same thing, with the only change being that instead of out of the auxiliary firing arc, you converting a focus to a crit, you would be able to deny yourself that extra attack dice and perform an extra attack that round out your auxiliary firing arc.
Yeah, so pretty neat. It gives the ship the option to, you know, attack out of the front or the rear, but allows some gameplay on kind of different threat abilities for each of those firing arcs. So that'll wrap it up for Wave 9. After that, we had the Heroes of the Resistance expansion released on October 27th of 2016, which included the Falcon and T-70 with more pilots and upgrade cards that weren't included in the initial Force Awakens release.
And there was a pretty huge upgrade card released in this expansion. We saw the Rey crew card released in this expansion, which has been a persistent force in the metagame since its release.
So explain to me how Rey is different than a recon specialist.
So we got to start by looking at Rey's ability. Rey's a two-point crew card. It's unique, and it reads Rebel only. At the start of the end phase, you may place one of your ship's focus tokens on this card. At the start of the combat phase, you may assign one of those tokens to your ship. Now, reserving focus tokens is not something that was new to the game. We saw this all the way back with the release of the Hawk 290 and the Moldy Crow title, which allowed you to prevent your focus tokens from clearing during the end phase, so you could stockpile a whole bunch of focus tokens on this ship. The reason I think this ability is different is that it takes tokens that were before an accessible and a potentially something an opponent could affect. They're on the board, they're part of the game ongoing, and kind of pulls them into the off-the-board state. So suddenly these focus tokens that you're saving are being stored on the Rey card. They're not actively involved on the board or next to the ship, so they can't be affected by abilities like Polyp Gadalhi, who likes to steal tokens.
Yeah, and it's kind of like a lot of different effects all packaged into just one card, where you have both the extra focus from the recon specialist, plus the bit of a Moldy Crow action going on. Pretty interesting, and definitely has been proven powerful.
We also saw another really interesting card release in this set. It's a secondary weapon card that's not in that missile or torpedo category. Snapshot was released, which is a very interesting design, I think, for an upgrade card.
Yeah, Snapshot is a two-point upgrade card that has an attack value of 2 and a range of 1 that reads, after an enemy ship executes a maneuver, you may perform this attack against that ship. Attack one ship, you cannot modify your attack dice and cannot attack again this phase.
So a two-dice attack is not particularly overwhelming, especially given the fact that it can't really be modified by anything. What is notable about this card is it's one of the first, but not the first, ability that allows you to attack outside of the attack phase.
Yeah, Quick Draw's pilot ability, if going over an asteroid, definitely grants that, but Snapshot grants it every time, not at the expense of a shield and going over an asteroid trigger. It's consistent. It is only limited to range 1. And it's really interesting to have an attack that's not modifiable.
Here, the designers had to find a way to tone it down, because being able to attack multiple times in a round is one of the most powerful effects in the game. We've seen abilities like Quick Draw and abilities like Dengar, where attacking multiple times in a round is about as good of an ability as you can get. Here, they toned it down by not only limiting the number of attack dice, but limiting the ways those dice could be modified. But this upgrade card did breathe some new life into A-Wings, which suddenly had a secondary option there to try and push damage through on the opponent by catching ships before they had stacked up a bunch of token modification.
Yeah, it's also cool. So you don't get to modify your attack when using Snapshot, but often the defender doesn't get to modify either, because the attack happens before they have a chance to get defensive tokens. So even though it's just a two-dice attack, it does have the potential to connect there.
Yeah, this is a very interesting card, and I think it's one of the cards that have led the way for allowing for attacks to exist outside of the combat phase. So after the release of Heroes of the Resistance, a few months later, we saw the release of Wave 10, which also came in two parts, much like Wave 8 of X-Wing. The first part was released on December to coincide with the release of the Star Wars movie Rogue One. We saw a release of the Wave 10 ships that were appearing in that film.
Yeah, we got the TIE Striker and the Rebel U-Wing, which I have to say, both those ships are really aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah, I love that TIE Striker a lot, especially with the game mechanics that they implemented along with that ship. And it came with a very influential upgrade card. Lightweight Frame is a two-point, TIE-only modification that reads, when defending, after rolling defense dice, if there are more attack dice than defense dice, roll one additional defense die. You cannot equip this card if you have an agility value of 3 or higher.
Yeah, so there's a lot of ways to, you know, bump up your hit points, add shields, but defense dice are probably one of the harder stats to improve. Actually, probably attack dice is easier to improve than defense dice. Stealth devices existed for a while, but that's a pretty volatile upgrade. But here, lightweight frame, vastly superior to stealth device, but limited in who can get it.
Well, and I think that's part of the beauty of the design of this card is it seems like the designers were very careful in that they didn't want to give ships that already had really strong defense a huge boon, and they also wanted to regulate how effective this was at giving lower defense ships better defense. Because what we see in the design here is rather than just saying that certain ships with certain agility values will roll an extra defense dice, it actually specifies windows here in order to make sure they're limiting the number of dice. So let's say you equip this on a TIE Striker, which has a native agility value of 2. So normally it just rolls 2 defense dice. If it's being attacked by a ship with 3 attack dice, basically no matter what, it's going to be rolling 3 defense dice because it's rolling fewer defense dice than the attacker's bringing in. This includes at range 3. So since you're doing this equation after you've already rolled defense dice, if you got a bonus defense die from your range 3 bonus, you're not going to trigger that lightweight frame and get a 4th defense die.
All right, so this difference for like 2 agility ships using lightweight frame means they often don't want to engage at range 3, where they're not getting their defensive bonus functionally. They'd rather engage at range 2.
It also means when they're facing off against ships with native attack values of 2, those ships are not having a huge detriment to their offense because lightweight frame only triggers if the attacker rolled more attack dice than you're defending with.
Right, and this card, not just great on the Striker, but really good on a lot of Imperial ships where usually you only took the Imperial ships that had 3 agility. Now with lightweight frame, it opened up your options to a lot more ships to be able to keep them on the battlefield.
In this first batch of Wave 11 ships, we also saw the release of the Pivot Wing, which, while the U-Wing hasn't proved to be a terribly effective ship in the game, it did come with a very interesting title card.
Yeah, the Pivot Wing title is probably one of the more unique double-sided upgrade cards we've seen.
So this card comes in at 0 points. The front side of it reads, Pivot Wing, parentheses, attack. This is a U-Wing only title, and it's a dual card. Increase your agility value by 1. After you execute a maneuver, you may flip this card. The backside reads, Pivot Wing, landing. When you reveal a 0 stop maneuver, you may rotate your ship 180 degrees. After you execute a maneuver, you may flip this card.
Yeah, so here, this card is a fun, flavorful way to capture the mechanic of all those Rebel ships with their moving wings, where the U-Wing gets to shift between being more resilient in combat or having that increased maneuverability when landing, which is pretty cool.
And since the U-Wing doesn't have a native K-turn, you really need to depend on this title if you're going to want to flip your ship around 180 degrees. But this puts a lot of pressure on you planning-wise because you need to decide, would I rather have the extra agility this round or do I need to flip my title card over so I can turn around the following round?
So we've had previous double-sided upgrade cards with adaptability coming out in Wave 8. But that one was really used as just 2 different upgrade cards you picked at the start of the game, whether you increase your pilot skill or decrease your pilot skill. It didn't change during the game. Pivot Wing is the first card that you flip back and forth during the gameplay. We, in the future, see more of these with, like, intensity. And I think it's really cool mechanics that I hope we see more of in the future.
The remainder of Wave 10 came out on February 2nd of 2017. This brought us some more X-Wing ships like the Upsilon-class shuttle, the Quad Jumper, and Sabine's TIE Fighter.
The Upsilon, as I know it, the Oops Shuttle, came with the Kylo Ren upgrade card, which was one of our first condition cards. Deals out the I'll Show You the Dark Side condition.
Kylo Ren is a 3-point crew card. It's unique and Imperial only, and it reads, Action Header, assign the I'll Show You the Dark Side condition card to an enemy ship at range 1 to 3. You also have the I'll Show You the Dark Side condition, which reads, when this card is assigned, if it is not already in play, the player who assigned it searches the damage deck for 1 damage card with the pilot trait and may place it face up on this card, then shuffle the damage deck. When you suffer critical damage during an attack, you are instead dealt the chosen face up damage card. When there is no damage card on this card, remove it.
Yeah, so we've had cards that have done parts of Kylo Ren, but never all of this together, and this definitely went way deeper than any other crit manipulation effect. Both Merrick Steele and Lebo have had the ability to dig a little bit into the crit deck and have some selection there, whether it's two cards or three cards. And then there's been some Rebel Astromechs that have cared a bit about the types of crits, be it ship or pilot. We're here. Kylo Ren is in that vein where it's caring about pilot crits. But this is very different, where it's selecting for a crit throughout the entire deck, which is, you know, Merrick Steele gets to look at three cards out of 33. Kylo Ren's looking at the whole deck. That's not even night and day. That's like night and like a whole year later. I don't know.
Well, and this is particularly devastating given that this damage is dealt underneath shields, which we've seen damage that gets dealt underneath shields before. But since it's a pilot crit, which often those are pretty brutal, we're talking about things like blinded pilot preventing you from attacking, or things like damaged cockpit setting your pilot skill to zero. This is pretty game changing and is another deterrent to get people not to play those high pilot skill, low hit point ace ships.
Yeah, Cornhorn with two hit points. Not a big fan of Kylo Ren.
In Wave 8, we also saw the release of a new tech card, Hyperwave Comm Scanner. This is a one-point tech card that reads, at the start of the Place Forces step, so this is happening as the game is being set up, you may choose to treat your pilot skill value as 0, 6, or 12 until the end of the step. During setup, after another friendly ship is placed at range 1 to 2, you may assign one focus or evade token to it. The back portion of this text, I don't want to focus on too much because assigning a token is not a new effect. But the first portion is changing your pilot skill while the game's being set up, which is pretty huge. We saw this in a form from adaptability, but that's a very slight adjustment. Here, suddenly ships are dramatically changing where they place in the setup sequence.
Yeah, and obviously they've been moving into this design space a bit, with multiple pilots interacting with setup. But changing your pilot skill is pretty impactful, where that's a lot of control in reading where your opponent's going to set up, or making sure all your ships have the opportunity to set up at the same pilot skill, especially if they all take the Hyperwave Comm Scanner. Then you can deploy your whole squad at pilot skill 12, reacting to all of your opponent's deployments. Definitely powerful.
And the last one we're looking at in Wave 10 is a crew card, Boshek, which is unique and comes in at 2 points. This is not faction-specific, so any of the three factions can use it. And it reads, when a ship you are touching activates, you may look at its chosen maneuver. If you do, its owner must rotate the dial to an adjacent maneuver. The ship can reveal and execute that maneuver even while stressed.
Yes, so this is noteworthy for being the only card that lets you manipulate your opponent's dial if you get that complete Boshek trigger. And it also cares about the physical arrangement of your maneuvers on the dial,
which is a factor that's never been relevant before. Now suddenly the position of your K-turns relative to your other maneuvers becomes something you have to consider, versus it just being an insignificant arrangement, whether the K-turn comes before or after your set of same speed maneuvers.
Right, and it's something that matters differently on each ship because they haven't really been consistent on where those maneuvers line up on the Talon rolls and K-turns. It kind of varies ship to ship.
And while Boshek hasn't been by any means a dominating force in the metagames, we've seen this design choice is very interesting and takes us to a whole new level of consideration where suddenly I'm setting maneuver dials. I'm not even sure if I'm going to be able to perform the maneuver I set.
Moving on, in June 8th of 2017, we got the Sea Rock Cruiser. Scum joins the Epic game, and we get the Cicatro Visago crew card to go along with it. The unique 0-point Scum crew reads, at the start of the end phase, you may discard this card to replace a face-up illicit or cargo upgrade card you have equipped with another upgrade card of the same type of equal or fewer squad points. Now, obviously, you're not using cargo in the regular game, but the ability to switch between illicits is pretty fascinating. One, this allows you sort of a sideboard-like effect from like card games, where you bring extra upgrade cards that you now have the option to swap out at some point during the game, which is unprecedented in X-Wing.
And I think that's really interesting in its application beyond Cicatro, because, well, Cicatro has some cool swap-out options, and it'll obviously expand as more illicits become released with new waves of X-Wing. This opens up a whole new design space, too, where the components you bring in your initial list aren't necessarily the components you're playing with at the end of a match.
Yeah, and I always, when I'm using Cicatro, display all of my potential upgrade cards I've brought with me to swap out, because at any given turn, they might want to know, okay, is that ship going to be carrying a feedback ray or perhaps a dead man switch? And the gameplay around each of those is very different, and it forces your opponent to have to consider a lot of different options.
Coming to the end of our discussion here, we're going to look at the most recently released wave, Wave 11 of X-Wing, which dropped on July 17th, 2017. This wave also had a whole new set of game-changing upgrade cards.
Yeah, we got both unlimited bombs and unlimited rockets in Bomblet Generator and Unguided Rockets. Each of these, you know, the mine on Bomblet Generator is worse than a lot of mines previously, but you get as many uses of it as you want. And Unguided Rockets is not a great rocket, but you get to use it as many times as you want.
Yeah, and looking at Bomblet Generator, which seems to have more impact so far than Unguided Rockets, this is a 3-point double bomb slot upgrade card. It's unique. When you reveal your maneuver, you may drop one bomblet token. This token detonates at the end of the activation phase. And when bomblets generate, each ship in range one of those rolls two attack dice. So it's a reasonably effective bomb that might fail on you. But the fact that you have an infinite supply of these means suddenly you're making a decision that often you're dropping a bomb every round, so long as it's not going to hit one of your other ships.
Yeah, and because you don't have to worry about running out of uses, it does take away a bit of the decision-making on, ooh, I'm not sure if they're going to run into this bomb, so maybe I want to save it for another turn. Where with the Bomblet Generator, you really don't have to worry about it. All you have to worry about is getting out of the way of it.
Obviously, this opens up yet another design space for the game where suddenly you could have ordnance effects and things comparable to that that have an infinite supply. Whereas before you had a finite number based on how many you had invested in, now you could potentially have an infinite supply of these types of attacks and modifications, which it's interesting to see where the game is going to go forward from this because that sets kind of a new threshold for efficiency.
Yeah, we also got the Minefield Mapper Systems upgrade card where, you know, we've seen more cards manipulating the deployment step. Well, now you can deploy your bombs during the deployment step.
Minefield Mapper is a 0-point system upgrade card that reads, during setup, after the Place Forces step, you may discard any number of your equipped bomb upgrade cards. Place all corresponding bomb tokens in the play area beyond range 3 of enemy ships. Now, this card isn't crazy effective, especially in a competitive environment, but it does bring us to a really cool design space where suddenly, beyond the normal asteroids and debris clouds that you place during setup, you can add additional elements to try and guide and close off lanes for your opponent.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot in previous episodes about a lot of the decision-making and strategy in the deployment step. And Minefield Mapper, of course, adds just even more nuance where you get to really control the terrain of those engagements you want to set up.
And finally, in our discussion for today, we're capping off with one of the newest and coolest upgrade cards. It's a new dual side card called Intensity.
Yeah, so Intensity 2-point, small ship only, elite pilot talent. On the front side reads, after you perform a boost or barrel roll action, you may assign one focus or evade token to your ship. If you do, flip this card. Then on the exhausted side, at the end of the combat phase, you may spend one focus or evade token to flip this card.
Now, this card's got a couple things going on for it. First of all, it's giving you some cool action efficiency. Not quite as dynamic as something like Push the Limit, where you have a full selection over these actions. But it does give you some action efficiency, where suddenly you can combine a repositioning effect with the ability to assign a focus or evade token, which is particularly good on ships like the T-70, which often have a hard time choosing a boost action when they're not going to get any defensive or offensive modification with that.
Yeah, it also gives ships access to evade tokens that didn't normally get access to evade tokens, like the TIE-SF, which can then combine it with Comm Relay to hold on to those evade tokens. A lot of different uses on Intensity.
And it's also got a really interesting costing mechanic because this is a powerful ability. But the fact that you then have to later spend tokens makes it very dynamic. So if you use this card, there's not a real risk to using it because if you don't end up needing those tokens, you can just spend them again at the end phase to reset this card. But it also sets up interesting situations where you have to decide, all right, how valuable is this round I'm in right now where I'm going to perform this booster barrel roll, get this action, and then deny myself this efficiency for the following round until I can re-trigger the ability.
Yeah, and it sets up some interesting gameplay and makes control effects that are snagging those tokens pretty powerful. So that should do it for our upgrade card series for now. Obviously, when more expansions comes out, maybe every year or every halfway through a year, we can check back up and continue this series.
We hope you guys enjoyed what we've done so far. I'd really recommend, if you didn't hear the first two parts of the series, to go back and check them out. And we'd love to hear your thoughts. If this is the kind of content you want to hear on the show, more historical stuff, more design stuff, we'd love to talk about that more. So we'd like to hear if this is the kind of content you guys want to hear from this podcast. And if you're looking for a way to share this podcast or X-Wing content with your friends, I feel like this is actually a pretty good series to start with, too, where you can give them kind of an overview of the game and some of the design elements by looking at these pivotal upgrade cards. Because now that we have 11 waves of X-Wing, there's a lot of content to take in if you want to jump into this game.
Yeah, for me, that earliest episode where we delved back into before I started, I thought was really insightful. And definitely a lot of fun to talk about as well.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/RadioTCX and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy listening to the show, please consider going on to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the show and why others might be interested in listening.
This week, we want to give a shout out to McChicken096. He says that, if you aren't always in tune with the current meta, this podcast is an easy way to get grade A info on what's popular, wave reviews, and potential lists.
Thanks, McChicken, and thank you to everyone who's left us a review on iTunes. It really does mean a lot to us.
If you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/RadioTCX and become a supporter of the show today.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.